WYPR is here to keep you connected to your community. And as our communities change amid the coronavirus pandemic, that connection is more important than ever before. Member support makes it possible. And if you can, we hope you'll help us out. If you're a sustaining member, consider increasing your monthly pledge or become a new member with a first-time gift. Come to WYPR.org and click the donate link. And thanks.
This is Anibon Basu with your Monday Morning Economic Report. Despite a strong employment market, a variety of factors has rendered 2018 a difficult year for first-time homebuyers, according to writer Jen Miller. Among the issues are the new federal tax law, a record low inventory of unsold homes, tough credit conditions, and rising mortgage rates. As has been well publicized, taxpayers were once able to deduct all of their state and local taxes, including property taxes, state income taxes, and city income taxes, from their federal taxes. Now those deductions are capped at $10,000. That's a problem for prospective buyers in New Jersey, for instance, where the average 2017 tax bill was about $8,700 statewide and more than $11,000 in counties that comprise the suburbs of New York City. What's more, there aren't many homes left to buy. In January, there were about 1.5 million existing homes for sale nationally, nearly 10% lower than a year ago. That number has declined year over year for more than 30 consecutive months. Moreover, credit is still more difficult to obtain than it was prior to the financial crisis, and lately it's become more expensive. By last month, the rate on a 30-year fixed mortgage had risen above 4.5%. For WYPR and my esteemed producer Bob White, I'm Anibon Basu. This is Anibon Basu with your Tuesday Morning Economic Report. As indicated by Bloomberg, executive compensation in America has never been higher. The average S&P 500 CEO now makes more than $10 million each year. The current year marks the first time that publicly traded companies must disclose how much they pay their CEOs compared with the median worker. The requirement comes from the Dodd-Frank Act passed in 2010. The ratio is calculated by simply dividing the CEO's compensation by the pay of the median employee. Honeywell International was one of the first large U.S. companies to disclose this information. The CEO there made 333 times as much as the median worker last year. Here are the underlying parameters. The median employee at Honeywell made a bit more than $50,000. The CEO made about $16.8 million. At Duke Energy, the ratio of CEO to median worker pay is 175, with the CEO making more than $21 million and the median worker earning an impressive $122,000. At T. Rowe Price, the ratio of CEO pay to median worker pay is 121, with the CEO there making about $11.7 million last year and the median worker earning $96,000. For WYPR, I'm Anibon Basu. This is Anibon Basu with your Wednesday Morning Economic Report. There is now nearly one job opening for every unemployed person in America. As indicated by writer Eric Morath, the number of job openings attained a record high earlier this year, while the number of Americans readily available to fill those jobs continues to trend lower. Recently released Labor Department data indicate the existence of 6.3 million available job openings as of January. That's the highest level on records dating back to the year 2000. The number of openings has been at or near record levels since July of 2015. But back then, there were 2.3 million more unemployed people than open jobs. Fast forward to 2018, and the gap between the number of unemployed and the number of job openings has dwindled to less than 400,000. The gap has shrunk despite recent increases in the number of people looking for work. Most economists agree that an improving employment market has attracted more people back to the workforce. While it is true that there often exists a skills mismatch between what employers require and what job seekers offer on an industry level, the highest rate of openings has been apparent in accommodation and food services, which frequently offer entry-level opportunities. For WYPR and my esteemed producer Bob White, I'm Anibon Basu. This is Anibon Basu with your Thursday Morning Economic Report. There has recently been a backlash against globalization. This has manifested itself in many ways, whether in the form of recently enacted tariffs on imported steel and aluminum or the British vote to leave the European Union. As indicated by writer Neil Irwin, the anti-globalization crusade may be occurring at precisely the wrong moment in economic history. The drive to limit free trade and immigration is arriving too late to do much to save the working class jobs that have already been lost, but early enough to risk damaging the capacity of wealthy nations to sell advanced goods and services to a rapidly expanding global middle class. Beginning with the 1990s, advancements in communications and shipping technologies rendered global outsourcing more feasible. At the same time, trade deals reduced tariffs and other barriers to global commerce. Many once impoverished nations became increasingly integrated into the global economy, including China and India. This allowed for a wave of affordable goods to enter wealthy nations, which led to employment dislocation among many in those nations. By 2008, the flow of goods and services across national borders as a share of all economic activity shot up to 31%, but has since declined. For WYPR, I'm Anibon Basu. This is Anibon Basu with your Friday Morning Economic Report. One of these days, the U.S. economy will be back in recession. According to the National Bureau of Economic Research, since 1854, America has suffered through 33 recessions. As indicated by scholar Robert Shiller, it has already been 105 months since the last one. Should the U.S. economy manage to expand for another 16 months, America will achieve its longest uninterrupted economic expansion in history. Though economists know that this expansion will ultimately end, economists are notoriously terrible at predicting downturns. Data from 1968 to 2017 supplied by the Federal Reserve Bank of Philadelphia from its quarterly Survey of Professional Forecasters indicate that economists generally have no ability to predict economic declines 1 year into the future. The most recent survey indicates that there is only a 17% probability of a recession over the next year, which is the average probability for a decline in GDP over a one-year period in all of the surveys since 1970. In other words, despite all of the current data to which economists have access, forecasters are collectively saying that there is nothing special on the horizon. But based on the track record, that doesn't mean a whole lot. For WYPR and my esteemed producer Bob White, I'm Anibon Basu.